Hi, I'm Anna.
And I'm Kent.
And this is Film and Family, a podcast for professionals in the film and entertainment industries who want to find greater joy and satisfaction in both their film career and their family lives.
Let's jump right in.
Today we want to share our interview with Akima Brown with you. And Akima Brown is at the forefront of making change for filmmakers who also have families. And so she is a very talented professional in the film industry. She is the founder of Real Families for Change. And she's just a really delightful, intelligent person. We're so excited for you to get to listen in on our conversation with her.
It's a real treat. We're excited to share it with you. Hi, Akima.
Hi, Kit.
Hey, thanks for joining us today on Film and Family. It's really a pleasure to have you.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Awesome.
Hi, Anna.
Hi. We're so happy to have Akima on the podcast today. She is a friend of mine and also a self-proclaimed artist activist with nearly 20 years of experience in both the public and private sectors in the film world. So she's worked as a writer, producer, casting professional. You can see some of her films on Discovery Network, Netflix, and she has some critically acclaimed short films as well. Quite an impressive resume. She owns and operates BTG, Multimedia Group. And she also, has, what did you call yourself for RFC? You
are Chief Executive Officer.
Founder and Chief Executive Officer of Real Families for Change. Did I miss anything important?
No, I don't think so. You make me sound awesome. I appreciate it.
Oh, you are awesome. Okay.
Yeah. So, Akima, I just want to ask some quick questions. So it sounds like you've done a lot of authoring of films, which I think is interesting to our audience as well. Filmmakers that are trying to either break into the industry in some manner or author the films themselves, right? Not just work their way into the industry. Either way, you know, we're addressing either people who want to have families or who have families of some sort. And you have a little bit of a backstory regarding your family. So talk to us about your family dynamic and how that has affected your film experience.
Oh, absolutely. So mine is a bit unique in that I actually was working, you know, the traditional 9-to-5. I was an educational research analyst before I got into film. And when I found out that I was having my first child, I decided it was time for me to actually do the thing I loved and do what I loved most. I had been dabbling in it as a freelancer for years, doing story analysis and things like that. And I said, I need for my son to see me living a fulfilled life, doing the thing that I really want to be doing and what I really truly love and knowing that it's possible. And did not have any idea how difficult that would actually be as a parent working in the industry, because I had been authoring and because I had been working in story and development, I hadn't been on set. I wasn't familiar with, you know, the crazy hours and things like that. And so I just really started to pay attention to what my barriers were and tried to find other people who were sort of dealing with something akin to that and trying to build a community around that so that I could have the help and the support that I needed in order to make that possible, because it was so important for me that he see me doing what I love and what fulfilled me and what I enjoyed, but without having to sacrifice him in the in the process of doing that.
Yeah.
So you were in film before, and then you had your son, and then you tried to get back into the film industry. What was different after becoming a parent?
After becoming a parent, the biggest difference was definitely the time constraints, wanting to be around for him. You know, it's before you have kids, you're burning the midnight oil. You're up at all hours. You're out at all hours. It just, the thrill of it all is fine. You know, you're collaborating and you're working and you, that's not a problem. But when you have another person relying on you, and you have another person who's looking for you and looking for your time and your love and your affection and your energy, you have to really prioritize things very differently. And that was probably the biggest thing for me, was wanting to work and needing to work, right? Because that's how we earn our income and we take care of our families. But then at the same time, not really knowing how I could balance that, because I was always, there was this absence. If I was at work, the hours were so long, I might miss putting him to bed, getting him up in the morning, things like that. And so trying to find that balance and that structure, where he would know that I was present, but then also being able to find the time to do the work, that it was almost non-existent once I had a child.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like, especially when kids are young, it's like, yes, a few months and they could be a totally different kid by the time, yes, you get back.
Yes.
They grow up so fast.
The personality. Yes. The personality is beginning to form, and just, you have all of these firsts and things like that. And you're not wanting to miss any of that. But then at the same time, you do need to work. But because this industry has such non-traditional hours, it's not quite the 9-to-5, you know, structure. I know there are a lot of parents who do work the 9-to-5 who struggle with that same sort of feeling. But when you're talking about, you know, a 6 a.m. to 8 p.m., then it's like it takes on an entirely different focus, because you're literally missing the entire day. And 2 days later, your child is walking. You're like, when did this happen? When did you start doing that?
Well, and you know, and it's fascinating, because I think some people hearing this are like, you know, maybe not some people hearing this, I think our audience probably understands this, but, you know, maybe people outside of industry or outside of family especially might hear something like this and say, oh, well, like, I mean, it's nice if you'd like to be there for those events, but like, but it's, you know, sort of this, you've got to do your job, but
it's competitive,
but like, competitive, it's not, industry. It's, yeah, it's a competitive industry. You know, you gotta bite the bullet. And I'm like, but it's not really always just about, I want to be there, even though that is definitely real. It's also about, I want them to know that I was there. It's,
yes,
it's not be there for me. It's be there for them. It's be present, yes, for these milestones. And it's not just while they're infants, it's the whole, you know, it's the whole,
the entire development.
Yeah, their it whole is. Lives, it's, you know. And so you, yeah, you set up a lifestyle and a career that requires this of you, and you can say you're going to change it, but it gets harder and harder the longer and more advanced in your career you get to make those big expensive shifts, you know. So yeah, it's definitely something that Anne and I totally understand, you know, what you're saying. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and there's so much that goes with that, because as you said, you know, not just wanting to be there, but wanting them to know that you were there. There's really so much, in my personal opinion, I guess I should say, there's not enough emphasis placed on the value of that experience, because when you have whole healthy people, meaning people who are doing the work that they love, and they have the family dynamic, the emotional balance as well, to couple with that, they then raise, they then contribute to, they then pour into whole and healthy little people who become whole, healthy adults. And I think oftentimes, you know, people overlook that component of it, where it's, well, you can want to be there, and it's a competitive industry. But how many of us, you know, either have the money but are an emotional wreck, or, you know, don't necessarily feel fulfilled? There's definitely a component of that, that it goes together. And that actually kind of goes very well with Real Families for Change, which is, Anna, what you were mentioning in the beginning with RFC.
Yeah.
That's really part of our focus, is looking at how can we streamline some of these shifts? How can we, you know, where does it start? And a lot of it is parallel, and it's happening at multiple levels at the same time. Looking at professionals who are working in the industry, both above and below the line, looking at key decision makers, you know, even talking through legislation. What does it look like to have our labor policies reflect, you know, reasonable work hours, and putting us in a position to really be there for our families. Because even in my situation, it's not just my son. I'm also a caregiver. So there's that aspect of it as well. And I know a number of people who are trying to balance that part too, who are kind of in that sandwich generation. So I think there needs to be a shift in that value. And that's part of the work that I'm working on and trying to do is shift the value that's placed on the family as a whole and what that looks like. And particularly in the film industry where it's notorious, where, you know, it's a taboo to say you have a family. So we want to really work on that and make that change.
Well, I really want to dive a little more into some of the more specific things that you just mentioned about RFC, Real Families for Change. And I also want to mention a little bit or talk a little bit more about the taboo stuff, but I kind of want to ask you also, you're talking about wholeness and, mm-hmm. and you're talking about sort of this film and industry versus this family aspect of people's lives. And to some degree or another, everyone's got this family aspect of their lives.
Or at least a personal life.
Yeah. Or at the very least a personal mm-hmm. life and usually some sort of family aspiration, you know? And so what, I guess my question for you, and I'm trying to play maybe cynic's advocate. I don't know. So why would you say that even matters? If you want this family stuff, why don't you just realize that maybe someone would say, doesn't that make you less passionate about the work? Wouldn't it be worth just kind of putting that stuff off and like really focusing on the film career, or it's so competitive, oh, wow. you know? Well,
love that question.
Yeah. Well, why do we need families in the film industry, or I guess family representation?
Oh yeah. See this, now you're getting into my nerdy stuff.
Great.
So one of the things that I studied, I'm all excited now. So first and foremost, studies have shown that families are the cornerstone of any society. When you look at society, you can see how healthy it is dependent upon how healthy the family dynamic is across the board within the society, right? So mm-hmm. when you have families that are falling apart and breaking down, you find that society is doing the same. That's the macrocosm part of it, right? That's the 30,000 foot view. Mm-hmm. When you look at, however, how those families then inform, how society then informs industry. And so when you talk about having healthy families, you're talking about having healthy people. You're talking about having people who have a level of emotional intelligence. You see decrease in conflict. You see higher productivity. You see better lines of communication. You see people actually going into industry and it becoming more innovative and advancing more quickly. And so as these things are happening, it's usually because outside of that work, there is a level of fulfillment that people feel on a personal level. So let's say it's not necessarily family, but it is most likely going to be some kind of an interpersonal connection. Typically that comes from, you know, our tiny tribes, our families, whether that be, those who are blood related or those family connections that we make around our communities. And so when you have that and you see those innovations, you see that advancement, you see that productivity, you see the decrease in conflict, you see those things. Film is a collaborative industry. You need people like that in your industry to make your industry thrive. You need people like that to ensure that your industry is going to continue to grow, that it's going to continue to advance and not become stagnant. Because in truth, we have a pandemic right now. We're trying to figure out how does that work? What can we do? You need people who actually are able to problem solve and to critically think. You find that people who are caregivers, parents, heads of household, things of that nature. Those are the folks who actually use an entirely different component of their brain that allows them to problem solve in split second decision making. Those are the folks you want going, okay, how do we determine the best means of reopening and getting back to work and doing these different things? And so we want to have that, even if for no other reason than, hey, you know what? does it make you less passionate? No, it actually makes you more passionate and more fulfilled. Does it take away from the career? Not at all. It actually is going to make you a better professional when you have these external aspirations and these external connections, and you have these healthy interpersonal, you know, communities that you're part of. So I would love to talk to the person who thinks, oh, you know what, either get out of the industry or, you know, quit trying to aspire to this family thing because it's not worth it or whatever have you. And again, I think that goes back to that shift in the value. If we perceive value in family and we understand what all the benefits are when we have these connections and we have these ties and how it plays into what that gives us on a professional level and personal levels in other areas, but how it gives back to us, I think we think about it differently and we appreciate it differently. And because we appreciate it differently, then we are willing to accommodate for it differently and make space for it differently.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
Than we do now.
I think you brought up so many good things. I can't even touch on all of them, but you know, one thing that jumps to mind is an interview I read by two lady DPs. One of them was Rachel Morrison, the cinematographer on Black Panther and Fruitvale Station, Mudbound. Mm-hmm. Her work's remarkable. And she made a comment really to the effect that you're making.
She is a mother.
Yeah. And she's a mom. And mm-hmm. and she made a comment to the effect of both the DPs that were interviewing each other were mothers. And they said, it totally changes set when you're like, people are freaking out. You're running out of time. You're under these like high stress situations. And they're like, listen, any day on set is easier than any day with a 4-year-old. And they're just, you know, in comparison, they've been seasoned and weathered to a degree that some people just haven't experienced yet, you know? And that's not, I don't want to make that come off as like, you know, people who are parents are better than others, because some people aren't parents for a variety of reasons. And that's not, it's just simply not the case. But all of our unique life experiences give us unique capabilities and perspectives. And that is one in particular that I think we should be hungry for in this industry, that this hungry to take in, to seek people with these unique family experiences, which, you know, aren't crazy unique, but we want to accommodate those family experiences so that they can inform the work, and also hungry to share our own experiences, you know, so
even if that's in the work.
Yeah. In the work itself. Yeah. And so that, I think it's really wonderful how that can inform, you know, the industry experience, but also the movies themselves. So I love it.
Yes.
And that's something we talk about a lot, is just advocating for this idea that film and family are not mutually exclusive. They're mutually supportive. Yes. And this is a lot of what you were saying, but basically the idea that I'm a better mom because I'm doing something I love and it helps me feel fulfilled and I'm being an example of pursuing my dream. And also I'm a better filmmaker because I'm a mom and I've learned a lot of these skills of dealing with high stress situations and problem solving and all of that. And those two both inform each other and benefit each other if we can recognize it, like you say.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to dive a little more into Real Families for Change. So you mentioned sort of this big, almost kind of buckshot approach to finding a variety of directions to solve some of these issues in the industry. We've talked a little bit about the issues being scheduling and hours, I think is a big one. Are there any other big obstacles for a parent in the industry that you would want to mention? And then what is RFC doing? You know, anything that you could dive into in a little bit more fine grained specificity on what your mission is in that organization.
And just what you see a lot of, you know, what are the common things that just keep occurring because you're speaking with so many people who are going through this.
Yeah. So just backing up a bit. What Real Families for Change is, we are designed as a public service organization. Like that's our goal. So we are very much front facing in terms of advocacy. And so what happens is, we really are kind of boots on the ground when it comes to like you said, time. And so as we're looking at that, we're looking at reasonable work hours and how to really better construct that. And that's not simply at the studio level. That's also looking at the unions. That's looking at legislation. That's looking at community support. How can we ensure that we are making the time where we're doing the work in a way that makes the time for people to be with their families? That's probably the number one thing, because it has so many subsequent challenges that come with it in terms of, you know, relationships and fractures that come as a result of, you know, people's absence because they're working. But then if you're not working, you're not getting paid. And so that becomes a different kind of struggle. And so some of the ways that we're looking to address that as well, also looking at pay equity and looking at what is it, how do we ensure that we are preparing people to, we want to make sure people are receiving equal pay, but then we also want to make sure that we are helping folks to kind of address the project-based component of this work. Unfortunately, this industry can be feast or famine. And so looking at those things, because we do find that a lot of film families struggle with that in between time. A lot of people say, you know, when I'm not working. And so we are trying to find ways to sort of address that. There's also the issue of why people are not working. Many times we find that parents are not working because they're parents. It's not something someone is supposed to say outright, but there's this idea that if you say I took time off for the birth of a baby or even mourning the loss of a child to care for a spouse or a parent, a lot of people are finding that the falsehood, the false perception is that then that must be more important than the career. Kind of like you were saying earlier, Kent, right? Like, is why even bother then? And so maybe the career isn't for you. Maybe you're not cut out for this. And so people then don't get that call. They're not being called in for the work. And so we're working with industry decision makers and with studio execs and with union reps to say, okay, we need to shift this. Let's look at this differently. We're providing instructional courses. We're offering programs to really sit down and look at corporate culture. People forget that even though this is film and it's art and it's entertainment and, you know, there's all this element of mystique, it's still a business. The film industry is very much a business. And as such, it does have a corporate culture, and there needs to be a shift that accommodates for families within that culture. And so we're really working hard to start those conversations and leverage those conversations for the benefit of the families in the industry. But those are probably the three biggest things that we see. And so those are the three things we're kind of tackling right now, just really making sure we're making space for time. We want to have reasonable work days for sure, making sure that people are being paid equally, and then also making sure that there are hiring and retention practices that are not penalizing parents or caregivers for taking time with their families and you know, attending to personal obligations.
Yeah. I don't want to paint the picture too grim, but I'm reminded of the other cinematographer in that interview with Rachel Morrison was slated to DP Creed, but then was told that they didn't feel that she would be able to because she was due to have a child, I think, a few weeks before production photography was going to start. And she had said, like, I feel like that should have been my decision to make.
Yes.
You know, not their decision to make, because otherwise she was slated to do it, as far as I understand. And that's, you know, obviously according to her. But you know, and that was a big opportunity. I mean, Creed was a big movie. And so, it's a real thing, but so can I play advocate again? I want to ask.
Go for it.
So, and because this is a challenge that I find on the ground, as an independent producer, Anne and I are are kind of, we're really content focused. We're really trying to actually write scripts and make movies. And on the independent realm of things, you know, when I'm cooking the books and I'm responsible to an investor and I say, I have to rent, you know, this much equipment, this much facility, I am paying day rates, crew, cast. Sometimes that gets enormous. And I tell an investor, I'd like to shoot for 8-hour days, you know, and they might say, well, why, you know, like cost wise, bottom line wise, like you were saying, that business aspect can sometimes push hard. And that's, I think, why we see these family dynamics not meshing super well with the industry. So if you were presenting, you know, these ideas, I assume these are the sorts of pushback that we're going to get as we're trying to make this into a thing that people with family perspective and family lives can engage with, not at the expense of their family members and or their, I guess, relationships. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Have you been asked that question, or have you kind of ran up against that mentality?
Yes, we've been asked that question, and we have run into that quite a bit. And it's something we're still working through, but there are a couple of things. This is just me. I am a firm believer in agile workflow. I think that there are a lot of times where on set you're doing the hurry up and wait. You have a lot of times where there's quote unquote nothing happening. There are things that we can pre-plan that are kind of done on the fly. I think that there's quite a bit that you can mitigate ahead of time to allot for. I wouldn't necessarily say an 8-hour day. I'm going to be honest. It may not be 8 hours, but there are some who are looking at, okay, let's do a 45-hour work week, right? Let's look at how we can go ahead and create a workflow system that might look a bit different. You might have maybe one or two job shares that are happening on set so that someone is handling part A of the task while someone else is handling part B, so that this same job, as opposed to having the one person try to work multiple hours across the day on this one thing, you are splitting up certain tasks and delegating across that. So there are models for making that work. There's also the aspect of flexible childcare and things of that nature that allow for, you know, if you are going to work an extended day, how can we, as the studio, the union, the production company, how can we support you in ensuring that these things are available? And so RFC is sort of saying, how can we also make sure that we're not throwing that responsibility onto the studios and the productions and the unions, but are still giving them the necessary resources to support parents. Even if it's a directory or a list or something that allows for us to model that day so that, yes, we are getting that bottom line. And again, I think it comes back down to the workflow systems that we have in the film industry. They are not awesome, for lack of a better term. In many instances, I'm not saying this is across the board all the time, but there are many instances in which, because of the way that we work, it takes so long to get through the day. And in any other industry, that would be considered, you know, a bottomless pit. That would be a problem. That would be a red flag. Whereas in the industry, it's often taken as, you know, all right, we're working really hard. We're trying. And I think that we can find ways to do things a bit different. I'm a firm believer in looking at things that may not be working and figuring out, yes, this may be how it's always been done, but how could we maybe do it better? And yeah. I think that there's definitely something to be said there for, you know, that 8 to 9 hour day, as opposed to 10, 12 plus. At times.
Yeah. 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 Well, not just at times, but regularly.
Like regularly,
that is,
right?
That is a standard.
I was trying not to paint too grim a picture.
No, but no. Well, and it's not like a horribly grim thing. It's, it's pretty much a matter of fact. It's mm-hmm. pretty much a matter of fact in the movie industry. Now, if you're in corporate cinema, that's a little different. Corporate videos and commercial mm-hmm. cinema and stuff like that. But yeah, in movie industry, 12 hours standard, and OT is not uncommon. So it's absolutely a valid point, and it's a real valid concern for people. And so
I love that you're making it as easy as possible as you approach these kind of decision makers in the industry to say, look, you don't even have to do the work to figure it out. Here's some examples of how it could work and what the workflow could be like. And yes. I think that is always helpful. And then
yes,
I also think that what it comes down to when they're making a decision like this, I think often when we're buying something, we want to focus too much on what we're giving up. And so right. a lot of people are going to want to say, yeah, but look at the marginal difference. If I, you know, cut hours this much, they're going to just look at all the money they're losing. But what we need to compare is what you're giving up and what you're getting in exchange. And so I think if they correct. See the value and that they're actually purchasing people, talented people who have certain skills and have a certain perspective. And I honestly think in any business, the people are your most important investment.
Exactly.
And if you're investing in the right people, that is worth so much more than what you're giving up. And if it's worth more than what you're giving up, then it's no, you know, it's not a hard decision to make.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you know, and this is an interesting dynamic. And I push hard with some of these, you know, hypothetical questions, which are very real, because this is the kind of thing that I think Anna and I, in our own career, being in a sort of as a producer of an independent film, feeling very responsible over the production, the timeline, and the investors, and yet also being parents of small children and realizing that that's a very serious responsibility as well. And a huge part of our lives, and it hugely informs our creative work. And so we would never want to cut that out of our lives. And so I love your perspective that there's this potential for creative solutions. And I think what you're saying is true, that there's this locked perspective of this is the way things have already always been done. And it's hard enough to break into the industry, much less break it up and change things yes. and shake things up. And yet I actually think that what you also mentioned, this idea of agility, which COVID is kind of making into a necessity anyway, because we really are, it's becoming harder and harder to have, you know, 100, 200, 300 people on set.
Yes.
And so you start to say, okay, you know,
we have to reinvent the industry.
You know, 1917,
where reimagine we have to reimagine it completely.
We're 1917, where we're going to have to stitch shots together, so the shots have to match, and so we're going to sit and wait for an hour while the clouds move. You know, and the stuff you're saying about these inefficiencies on sets and stuff, and how aren't there creative solutions around these things? Or isn't there a way to prep for those sorts of scenarios? Isn't there a way that we can, you know, these people who know how to think on their toes and they can bring this expertise of multitasking that's absolutely yes. required at the home, and emotional intelligence and the patience that's required when dealing with children. You come on set and say, well, look, we've experienced this before. Let's make a plan. Let's get it done in 8 to 9 hours. If that's what we have, that's what we've got, and we can make it happen. And when you change your minimum baseline, it really is a possibility. Anyway, I just want to second some of the things you said after pushing hard for them, just because it's
a mind shift. No, I appreciate you doing it though,
yeah.
because it does give me an opportunity to kind of express what we've been thinking through and some of the solutions that we have been considering, because this is what people ask. This really is what we get asked often. So I actually thank you for taking that stance.
Yeah. Well, and I want to just also let our listeners know that there are people out there that believe that this is possible. And a lot of our listeners will have more power than they realize to make some of these things happen on their own, not just by taking a stand for themselves. But I think many of our listeners are independent producers, independent directors, independent writers, even actors who are in a position to actually suggest these things, enact sort of these approaches. And it's not just, like you said, studios. It's some of these smaller guerrilla filmmakers that are often making excellent films that make their money back, that are real professionals. We're not just talking about Marvel here. And by the way, while we're on Marvel, they shoot 10-hour days, you know, and so it's absolutely possible. Now, because of certain union fees, that's extremely expensive for most people to do. So that's where these conversations with unions come in, where it's like, do we have to penalize people, you know, and make them pay these huge actor fees for skipping lunch and shooting a 10-hour day, you know? So recognizing that in some ways that's actually hurting other people on set.
Exactly. And again, that's why they are part of the conversation, because we need everyone on board. And I appreciate you saying that, because that's really our stance. We need everyone on board. It's not just studios. It's not just the unions. It's not only indie. We need everyone. We need everyone to take part in this, because in order for the system to shift, everyone who is currently participating in the system has to kind of come to a general consensus of some kind and say, this is not working. And I think amidst COVID, we see, this is really not working. This is really not working. And so now we have it's an unfortunate, but it's an opportunity nonetheless to make some shifts and make some changes. And, you know, I'm just happy to be able to talk about it and say, this is what's needed and this is what's possible.
And I love that you're so have an opportunity. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut in. No. I love that you're so passionate about it, because I think for some people this can feel so overwhelming and so discouraging, but we're creatives. And I think if we look at this as a creative constraint, a creative challenge, like, it can be kind of exciting to say, how are we going to figure this out? I'm sure we can figure out something that will change everything, or even little pieces at a time that will put it together. And I think I feel really proud of, even just in our own life, the little things, as we stick with it and we keep trying to balance both, the little solutions that we find, whether it be like, you know, a two-way camera to check in on the kids, or getting service in a remote location, or like for me as a mom who's nursing, and I have been for like 6 years now, finding a breast pump that I can just wear, that's portable, that doesn't have to be like attached to a wall, stuff like that. It feels like a lot, but little by little we start to find solutions, and it's kind of a fun.
And it's these are creative solutions that only come when you actually decide to believe that it's possible, and you just move forward toward it as if it's going to happen. Because what happens is, when we don't believe, and even if we believe that, on the one hand, I agree with you, Akima, that, you know, it's got to be everyone, but it really just has to be one person, and that's the individual that decides, this is the way I'm going to shape my life and shape my career. And, you know, it's going to be, you only get to everyone by one individual at a time. And
so
when a filmmaker, when an actor, a studio executive, a director, or writers, I suppose writers aren't usually doing the 12-hour shifts, but writers, I've heard many of them are just like, I just do 8 hours a day, and when I'm done, I'm done. But there's
depends
others.
Depends on where you work.
Yeah, it depends on where you work, and it depends on, you know, how quote unquote valuable you are, which I don't like that paradigm. But you know, and so when an individual decides that that's the way it's going to happen, you know, Anne and I even, you know, we had some of these conversations before we got married, and we basically said, we're going to create this life, which makes absolutely no sense, which is like, we're going to make these films and we're going to do it together, and we're going to have kids, and maybe we'll homeschool those kids. Like, you know, and it sounds absurd, but then you just kind of just do it. And it doesn't make any sense until slowly but surely, one step at a time, you start to question things and go, well, does it have to be this way, or does it have to be that way, or do we have to do things the way these other people have done it? And can I take a little more creative control over each step? So anyway, I'm saying this mostly for anyone listening to the podcast. Like, you don't have to wait for everyone to be on board. You can be on board now yourself and decide that this is possible for you, and you can shape your film career, and you can shape your own family life. And it reminds me of what Stephen King says in his book On Writing. He says, art is a support system for life and not the other way around.
Right.
You know, you don't vet your life and sort of suck it dry so that your art can breathe and become alive. Because then you die and then there's no artist left. And so, and that's what he's speaking from experience, you know, and like, recovery from alcoholism and all these other things that he experienced. And I think that's something all of us experience in the film industry. It's easy to fall on one side of that, on one side of that or the other.
I definitely agree with that. And I would even say, I do believe that it does begin with one person. You can't get to everyone until you start with the one. I do also know, I strongly urge anyone out there who is listening to, yes, be the first and take that first step. And also to, I'm always the fan of finding like-minded individuals, because there's something about, so there's an African proverb that says, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And essentially what happens is, when you're going, you can make that shift and you can make that change, and it will happen for you. But a lot of times it can get lonely. I do think that one of the things about this industry is that it can be somewhat isolationist. And I think having other people who maybe aren't necessarily taking the same challenges as you, maybe they're not quite as ready, but who can at least cheer you on and keep you motivated and because I think that's been a major benefit from being able to do this work, is that I do have people around me who, they're not in film. They don't have any idea what I'm doing. they think I'm crazy 99.999% of the time, but they do at least say, you know what, if that's what's working for you, you keep doing it. You don't give up. You keep trying it. You create that crazy life. You do that thing. You be that example. Have no idea why this is what you would choose to do, but I support you. I believe in you. I trust you. Go for it. And so even if it's not necessarily other artists who are with you, I do think, or who are doing what you're doing, I think having that support system is definitely key. To making it happen and to making that shift and to sticking with it. Because a lot of times when you get that pushback, it can be hard to cave. And knowing that you have people who are saying nope. And I even think just this podcast, just really having a space like this that exists to encourage and inspire people to keep going in the midst of what they're trying to create in this industry. I think that's awesome. I think that's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think, I think that, sorry, I'm trying to formulate what I'm saying here. I kind of spaced it. Right. I was listening so intently to what you were saying, and then I spaced what you I was going to say. Well, that's okay, because I really think what you're saying is important. Oh, you were saying, if you want to, I love that proverb that you said about going fast versus going far. And I really do believe that the long game is the better game to play.
Yes.
And I think this idea of going far means a lot about looking forward to legacy. And legacy is focused on individuals, yes, and people and families. And I think that, you know, people that are outside of ourselves. And I believe that there are lots of artists and professionals and producers in this industry that feel this way. They feel that these things are important. And again, like, if we want to get as many families into this industry on as many movies as possible, but yes, if it takes starting by factioning out and finding those like-minded people and just finding a sustainable way to make movies the way and in the process that you believe in, then you pull together. And so you pull together because you can prove that it's possible. And then when people start to see that it's possible, then it starts to change yes. mindsets. And so that idea of like just finding that, I don't like tribe, maybe because it's a little buzzwordy, but finding those, I wish I could remember who. Sometimes I remember really cool things said by people who I can't remember who said them. But it was a DGA podcast. They have a great podcast called The Director's Cut, which I recommend anyone listening to check it out, especially if you're interested in directors. Where one of the director's main advice to aspiring filmmakers was find your people. Find the people that you can make films with that will help you through the early days where you don't have a lot of money and where you're sort of doing everything on speculation. Find your peers. And I think in this case, the same applies. Like, find the people that realize, well, what do you do when you put a bunch of moms and dads and people who actually want to have lives together and say, let's just figure out a new way. Then those are the people, you know, and you got to find each other and pull together. I don't think they're as rare as we make them sound.
Well, and I also love the proverb that you shared. Kent and I are runners, and so I related to that because he's much faster than I am. And sometimes I wonder if he would be better without me because I slow him down, you know? And we ran a marathon together, and I knew that his time would have been better if we weren't staying together the whole time. But at the same time, he has a hard time waking up in the morning and going running. And so I don't know if he would have made it to the marathon at all. And so
I never ran one before we got married, even though I ran all through high school and a lot, you know,
but it's
incredible.
Like,
but it's so true.
It doesn't matter how fast you are if you don't make it to the end. Like,
exactly. And, you know, on that same note, running has become a deeply ingrained part of our family culture. And that wouldn't be the case if I ran by myself and ran as fast as I could every day, even if I was extremely disciplined and we didn't stick together. Either you would, you know, maybe burn out or not want to do it anymore, or I would most likely burn out because I'd be overdoing it or whatever. But, you know, for us, that's what worked. And so it's, I love that, honey. That's
well, and I just wanted to ask you, Akeem, I know we need to wrap up here, but, what would you say to someone who is experiencing this right now, as far as next steps moving forward? How can they get involved with what you're doing with Real Families for Change? What advice would you give them to start to really see these changes in their life?
Well, that's a great question. So I think we touched on it a bit, which is, you know, find your people. I think be honest with yourself. I think that's the first thing, because in being honest with yourself, you're going to know what you want to create. You're going to know what that looks like, and then be utterly relentless and unapologetic about that. Be completely honest with yourself so that you can be authentically honest with everyone else around you about what this life looks like and what it means to you. And then find people who support you in that and can help you to build that. And where I think Real Families for Change comes into that process, we're always looking to hear from people about what that is for them, about what that looks like. One of the very first meetings that we had, I asked everyone, you know, in an ideal world, what does it look like to have, you know, everything, to have your family and your film career? What does it look like? And some people said, I can bring my kids. Some people said, you know, I can go home at a decent hour. Other people said, I'm making family films with my family. Like they're there. They're part of the process. That's what I want to see. And it wouldn't be odd, you know, for my kids to be learning this trade and apprenticing on set at 12 years old. And I was like, okay, but it's, what works for you and finding the people who can help you to build that. And so Real Families for Change, you can find us on social media at Real Families, R-E-E-L, Families. You can find us online at realfamilies.org. Our website is still under construction, but We have our chat box there. Feel free to chat with us in real time. Facebook, same thing. We do have a Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/realfamilies. And yeah, we just welcome the conversation. We want to know what it is that people are trying to create, and we want to help people to find their people, essentially. Like I say tiny tribes. I'm a big fan of tiny tribes and creating those and saying, hey, these are my people and I'll go to bat for them. And I know they go to bat for me, and we support each other in creating what we want to see in our lives and in our careers. And so I think, you know, if that's something that interests folks, we'd love to have them come on board and be part of it.
Great. Thank you so much. And thanks for joining us today on the podcast. And I just want to second what she said for everyone here, that it feels really good to find this community of people who are like-minded and have similar experiences, and people like Akima who are amazing and are devoting their time to solving your problems for you, that it's just great to get a group together like this of creatives and brainstorm and share our experiences and see what we can create.
And, you know, film to me as a medium and storytelling in general is all about taking what makes you totally different than any other person and then showing that in a way that makes everyone realize that they're just like you. And because we're all the same, even though we're all completely different, and it's the paradox that only storytelling can kind of get at. And so you don't have to be whatever particular demographic or have whatever particular life experience to realize that the one thing that makes us all the same is that we're human.
This is what film is all about, is finding what we have in common that is common to humanity. Like every story, there's the archetypal stories, because we are all human and we have somewhat of a universal experience, and we all feel lonely sometimes. We all feel discouraged sometimes. And especially when we have similar circumstances, it can feel really nice to just relate with someone on a deep level and work together.
Well, and realizing that you're not alone. I think that was my point, was that it's a thing that people aren't talking about very much, but we're talking about it because I think it's really common. It's much more common than I think we believe. So, which means that there's huge power in this industry already to make these shifts, because there's lots of people with families in this industry. It's not an absurdly, you know, hard thing to believe statistically, in my opinion. And so, it's something that I think will strengthen everyone. So anyway, thanks again, Akima. I'll give up here.
Thanks for joining us. We'll let you get back to your family, and we appreciate the time.
Yes. My little one has actually been here this whole time. This is a family affair.
That's remarkable.
So yes, but I just want to say thank you again for having me on and for having this space, for having this podcast and creating this space to have these amazing conversations around family and film. This is awesome. And I loved it. I thank you for having me. And hopefully we'll get to do something like this again. This was nice.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Let's keep the conversation going.
We'd love to have you back on as things you know, shift and change and move forward over the months and years. So remarkable.
Wonderful. Anytime.
Awesome. Have a wonderful evening.
You can do the same. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good night.
If you think you're ready to take the things you're learning on this podcast to the next level, then I want to invite you to join our Film and Family program, or at least check it out. In the program, you'll get one-on-one private coaching with me every week. I'm going to teach you these tools in depth and how they apply to you and your situation. Then after you graduate, alumni receive ongoing lifetime support within our community, as well as access to any courses we publish absolutely free. It's also risk-free. You either get the results you want, or I'll give you your money back. Check it out at invisiblemansion.com/film and family.